B-Pod Studios.
Hello and welcome to Checkpoint Daily. I am Norris Howard, your host. We are here to talk about video games all the time. That's what we do.
7 days a week.
How are you, Chad? I'm alive. That is the bare minimum.
It's close. Thursday's here. Friday's right around the corner.
Well, you're doing better than North America.
Yikes.
I'm just saying.
Cali.
Yo.
I guess we know how you're doing.
I'm super disappointed today, man.
I see that. So
let's just dive right into it, because I got to talk about this. I got to get this off my chest.
Let's get right into it. Here's what's happening in the world of gaming.
All right, so Worlds picked up this morning, and normally we'd come on here and we'd talk about like results and stuff like that, but I don't care.
Yeah?
I think this is the year, and I don't know why, because it's not like I expected North America to be good, but this is the year where North America just flunking out again.
Yeah.
I don't care anymore. I'm checked out.
There's a face of total exasperation.
Yes.
But, you know, here's the thing that I feel very strongly and upset about when it comes to Worlds, right? It is one thing to crash out in a quarterfinal, getting beat by a team that is significantly better than you.
You lose 3-2 and you get booted out.
You lost 3-1 against Kingzone Dragon X. That's fine. There's no shame in that. There's no shame in showing up and performing.
Right.
Now, there will always be, unless you are one of two teams in the world, there will always be somebody better than you. Unless there very rarely is like this team is by far better than everyone.
Only
right?
one team is going to win the world championship. Yeah. I get that. But what I feel like with North America failing in the group stage again, I went on Twitter today and I just saw everybody cheering for their team, super excited for their region, and just feeling like, I feel robbed. I feel robbed that I don't get to, even for if it's just for one day, I don't get to experience the early wake up to cheer for my team, to you know, put on the North American colors and feel some excitement. I feel cheated.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And I mean, yesterday G2 Esports put out a tweet saying the state of the West. Do you know how much I hate having a team from Europe speak for all of Western society
again? Because they blew it last year.
When it comes to esports, I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. And on top of that, the fact that a friend of the show, Brandon Braithwaite, replies to that tweet, I will begrudgingly support this team in the same way I begrudgingly support my choice of U.S. presidential candidate. And you
it's
know
so
what?
It's so true, though.
It's so true, but I'm tired of having to root for Fnatic in G2 every year, year in, year out, simply because I'm tired of seeing China and Korea win everything.
You want to know my secret?
What?
I don't care.
Yeah, listen.
I gave up hope.
That is my trick.
It's a lot like the Lions. It's a lot like the Tigers here in Detroit. Like internally, I'm like, I will support because you know that's where
hometown,
I'm hometown, home country, whatever. But like if they lose, I don't care.
But the problem with that, Chad, is that I've been apathetic, you know, over the Lions since I've been a child, right?
Yeah.
And
they have 80 years of losing.
To the point to where I actively antagonized my father about it.
About
to where
supporting
I told him,
them.
I literally have told him, you know, you're going to die before they win the Super Bowl, right? And he says, don't, it's the only thing I can say to him that can hurt his feelings. But, you know, I feel like it's different because there's still a level of newness and parity in esports where I expect it should at least be a damn fluke one day that you get out of groups.
Right. You should accidentally stumble into it.
Yeah, like, there should be one year where it's like, wow, NA actually got a crap group with the PCS region, the CIS region, and like the weakest European team still in the game.
Yeah, the European team all got sick on the way over, so they're not even playing.
At some point, some year, something should happen to where you can fall into a semifinal. Now, Cloud9 did it a couple years
ago. We know.
We don't want. I don't want to hear all that, right? But here is the biggest thing and the biggest issue I have with this, and I will say it again. There is too much damn money in the LCS to get this kind of result.
Yep.
Period.
Yeah, it's unacceptable.
Period.
I was thinking about this the other day and how, you know, the U.S. usually performs okay at Olympics.
Regardless, we dominate Olympics.
That's because we have a million contestants in every game compared to everybody else.
That's
my point. I wonder if there was like an Olympic style where it didn't rely on LCS, it didn't rely on like these organizations
that are
built in.
It'd be worse.
I don't know.
It'd be worse.
It'd be kind of great to see like
it would be worse.
I don't know. I feel like no organizations involved.
It'd be worse.
I was just saying.
And it's just amateurs only.
Right. It'd be significantly worse.
I'd be in. I would watch that.
We don't have. Here's the problem. We don't have the infrastructure here to support amateurs that are going to go compete on a world
basis. Not even that. The floor for how good people are actually at the amateur level is way higher in China and Korea.
Yeah.
Now, that, you know, there's internet and ping issues notwithstanding. But if you took the average player in Korea and the average player in America, it is not close.
Or a scouted esports talent in China who's now working in a government building at age 12 learning to play a game professionally. Yeah, they're going to be better than the kids over here.
I guess, if you put it in that perspective, that's
what it is. Like,
amateur.
In Korea, you're being scouted by esports teams at like middle school.
Think about that.
You've got so much more time to prep and get good.
Until we start
developing that infrastructure here, we're just never going to compete internationally.
So imagine that infrastructure's coming. Imagine, you know, magic happens.
Theoretically, if you say copy-paste the infrastructure from Korea, give us the best internet in the world, plus, you know, all the training and all the stuff that they have, put it in America, America will win Worlds every year.
And I'm not worried about winning. I just want it to be
performance.
They will be competitive every year if not win Worlds because of the financial resources that we have here. We will have the ability to pull a kid out of school, put him into an academy, pay them a fair wage to where it is actually desirable for kids to actually do this. So, yes, we would be the most dominant region in the world. We will not be able to do that at the bare minimum for the next until like 5 years from now.
Yeah, it's gonna be another 5-10 years of esports being an acceptable career path and parents seeing that.
Olympics happens every 4 years.
Hey, you know what?
Just saying.
Yeah, sure. Listen, at Worlds 2026, we may compete. And it sucks because I truly believe that's how long it's gonna take before North America competes.
Hey, esports is still young.
I agree, but to your original question, do I care? Yes, but barely.
Yeah, exactly.
You know why I care? I care because it's my job.
Yeah, because we have to do this. Because
I have to.
If I was a casual fan,
I'm out.
Yeah. I'm not watching the rest of it. Let me know who wins.
Yeah, I don't care. Yeah. No. But anyway, another sort of really cool tidbit of information coming out of, again, Korea is the revelation that the Mass Effect, the Legendary
Edition
is coming out now.
It got
Callie, tell us what we're hearing out of Korea.
Well, Mass Effect Legendary Edition, a game that is not announced and is supposedly doesn't exist, just got rated in Korea. It got an official rating from the Korean ratings board, so
it absolutely exists.
What are they waiting for?
The game exists.
We know it does.
They're waiting for N7 Day.
I know. They want to make the announcement on N7 Day. It's the worst kept secret in the gaming industry right now. We know you're remastering Mass Effect. Everyone's going to play it again. Yes, I'm going to cough up my $60 to buy it again. And yes, I'm going to play all three of them probably on stream, even though I just played Mass Effect 2 on stream because they're great games. And I can't wait to play Mass Effect 1 when it's not janky AF.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing for me is I played Mass Effect 1 on PC. It was my first game and laptop. I played it on the PC. I hated the experience, but I loved the story.
Yeah.
Actually playing it was a slog, and it was terrible.
Dude, ME1 is janky.
It was awful.
Yeah, it's not great.
But Mass Effect 2 is one of the greatest games ever made.
Correct. Top five all-time games. Yeah.
Easily. And, you know, I can't wait to actually play this in, like, 60 frames a second, slightly upscaled, you know, on my big 50-incher at the crib. And so, like, it's going to be a really great experience, but I agree with you, Callie. Why even make this, like,
secret? Why is this still a secret?
It's like, not a listen, secret.
November 7th will be here soon, and we'll get the announcement. But it's just like, guys, we know.
Yeah.
Everyone knows. The leaks are all over the place. Just announce the game.
I've been asking Callie, and I don't know if we know yet. I mean, because it's the worst kept secret. But what level of remaster is this? That's what I was worried about. Is this like Final Fantasy VIII Remaster, where it's just like semi graphics?
Yeah, where it's garbage.
Like, it's just faces that they're messing with, or is this like actual battle system and actual graphics?
It sounds like a pretty intensive remaster, because they definitely.
For ME1. They have to fix it.
That's what I was going to say, because like, it reminds me of when Kingdom Hearts got the remaster, the first one, because the camera was trashed. Yeah. There was a lot of problems with the combat. But at the time, it was fine because you had nothing to compare it to. Right. Then 2 came out, and you're like, wow, that one was trash. I don't know how I played that.
And so those are the rumors that go around, that originally this game was going to release on N7 Day.
Yeah.
However, they were struggling with the remaster of ME1 because it needed significantly more work than both ME2 and ME3 did, which it absolutely does. So listen, if we can play those three games and ME1 isn't just a slog to get through now, I'm super looking forward to it. Norris, how much would you pay? What's the number?
All three.
What would you go up to for the Legendary Edition?
Oh, dude, if it's more than $60, it's a fleecing. Get out of here. It's retail $60. Don't charge me more for this game.
I hear what you're saying. I'm just saying, if they charge $90 for it, they'd still sell out of it.
They will.
They'd sell.
If you charge me, first of all, I know it's EA, so yes, they're absolutely going to charge you $90.
Mm.
But if you charge me $90, I'm out. I don't want to. I've already played and beaten them multiple times.
What?
Dude, it's a remaster. It's not a remake. It's a remaster. Don't charge full price for this.
That's fair.
The FF8 remaster was $20.
$20,
that's true.
Yeah.
And even Final Fantasy VII.
Now, to be fair, its remaster was pretty eh.
That's the thing.
Not the one on the Switch. That was great.
I mean, it's super fine. Playable,
it's
but
still
like...
That's the thing. That's what I was asking Yali. It was like, it's still literally the same background graphics. It's literally the same fights. It's literally the same everything. The combat, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Only thing they updated was the faces.
Well, to be fair, it's not like FF8 was a broken game.
No.
In many cases, ME1 was broke.
Okay, but I mean, I don't know. I feel like they could have done more. I feel like that was a lazy remaster,
all right,
in my opinion. For Final Fantasy VIII, at least. But my question was, $60 for the game. What DLC would you expect to see? Like, if they were going to add...
All of it.
DLC.
Oh, new? I don't think you're going to get anything new out of this.
I don't think you're
going
to
get it.
I don't know. Why couldn't you?
Mm-mm. I mean, listen, I'd love them to do new DLC.
But code it back into an old engine?
That's my concern, I don't think it would work well. Now, I expect to get all of the DLC with it. And Lord knows there was plenty of it.
I would imagine that's hopefully included if it's legendary. So if it came with DLC... pack and not with DLC pack? Do you think
$60?
$60, not DLC. $90 with DLC.
You're saying if they did make new DLC for ME?
Oh, well, not even. Like, just like
the DLC that was already there.
DLC that was already there is not included, but it is in this one, the extended edition or whatever they're going
to
call it.
I will get on these airwaves and I will rake EA across the coals if they try to fleece $30 out of me to play the best part of the game, which is the DLC. Like, I'll pay the $30 for your stupid party because it's the best thing in the whole game and it's better than the ending.
I mean, I'm not here to throw ideas in EA's face, but I just have a strong
I'll get on the air and I will eviscerate them.
But what if it was $90 straight up with everything in general and there wasn't a secondary option?
Would you still be
furious?
That's too much.
It is so much. It's hard to get mad at it, but like...
That's a lot of work, though.
It is, and it's three full games with DLC. I get that.
We've been talking about how games need to go up in price. They do. This is technically three games.
It yeah.
is. I'm trying to play devil's advocate.
But it's three games they already made.
They already made. That.
Did, yeah, but it's better.
I had to get a remaster, but remastering a game is not the same as making a game.
I bought the Kingdom Hearts like whole remaster, yeah. the entire set, for like the $60. So like full price when it first came out. So I
understand.
How many
games is that?
It's a lot, but
that's what I mean. That's like nine games.
Yeah, but at the same time, like this is kind of the same concept.
Yeah, but if you charge, you don't want to. If you charge the price of three full retail games for games that came out almost 15 years ago,
but remastered,
it's not the same as a remake.
I feel like this is much more than just Final Fantasy VIII remake or remaster.
I agree. Well, this first is a of all, bigger, it better be.
It better be. Yeah. It better be. But. That's my point. I feel like there's a difference between, yeah, we made the graphics better, and yeah, we totally rehauled everything in the first stupid game because it was broke. That's a different story altogether.
Yeah, and it's still not the amount of work All of right. putting in a full game from scratch, from the ground up. All if right. it's more than $60, you're not getting no money from me. I hate you, EA. I'm going to say it again. You guys are scum. You keep taking everybody's money for the same BS all the time.
Yeah.
You're doing it again because you know you had a flash in the pan with these three games. You've yet to recapture the magic yep. from these games ever again. This is the last good thing you've ever done, and it'll be the last good thing you ever do as a company. Leave me alone, EA, and here's my $60 for Mass Effect.
And everyone will continue to support it because, well, why not?
Exactly.
And they'll continue.
But anyway.
Anyway, when's the new Star Wars game coming out?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Here's the, you know, one thing that also is coming out for a game that has way too many installments and probably should go away for a while is Call of Duty. Call of Duty is putting out some interesting Halloween-based skins. Chad, I wanted to get your opinion on these because according to some data miners, this was originally reported over at Dot Esports, but according to some data miners from COD Tracker, there is both Saw and Texas Chainsaw Massacre skins coming. So, Chad, how do you feel about these?
Okay. I come from the Dead by Daylight world where technically both of these licenses are in that game.
Right.
So,
really, Saw is?
Saw, yep, it's Amanda, the pig is based off of it. So not Jigsaw himself, but the character is in the
Got
game,
it.
Technically. But I really hope that these are early renderings.
Nah, this looks final AF.
Oh, because first off, they have Texas Chainsaw's Bubba in here, and yeah. why is his face completely white?
Yes, yeah,
I don't understand
I mean,
that.
It's supposed to be skin colored,
It's supposed to be skin colored,
It makes
yeah.
no sense. And then why does Billy from Jigsaw just look so awkward and weird?
Why has he got anime eyes?
Yeah, why has he got anime eyes? I mean, sure, it's the puppet. I get it. But, like, what is it supposed to be a real person?
His mouth just looks like his mouth looks like a Hulk Hogan mustache.
Yeah, like, it's just weird. It does. You're right. This is freaking me out. That's 100% it.
I'm going to put you in a trap, brother.
Now, so I didn't see that. But now that you said it, it's all I see.
That's all I see. Even the hair. We just need a bandana.
Oh, my God.
My God. We need that as a drop now. Anyways,
we had a Hulk Hogan drop, but anyway, the thing is that with these skins, there's like some legendary weapons that go along with it, and some melee weapons and some sprays and skins and stuff. I think it's cool. I think Call of Duty actually should do way more of this when it comes to Warzone, because let's be honest, Fortnite got it on lock for IP crossovers. They got it on lock. They're the best at it. Really, some of the best in gaming.
I hate Fortnite, but it's hard to argue with, right?
You can't argue with it. Some of his crossovers are awesome.
And it's because they're like, hey, if we're going to do a crossover, it's going to go whole hog. It's going to affect the game drastically. It's not just going to be a skin like Thanos, right?
Yeah.
Thanos came in like, no, you've got the Infinity Gauntlet in the game, and whoever gets it is going to wreck face.
Yeah. And, you know, our engine was made by toddlers, so everybody can put everything into the game.
Yeah, that too.
So, yeah, that's that. I really think the skins are all right. I'm not crazy about them.
They're so clunky looking.
They're mad okay.
They are. I'm really disappointed in, like, the Jigsaw one, fine, whatever. It's a puppet, so, like, you have a little bit of free license. But, like, 100%, if that is the final render for Bubba, What a disappointment.
Yeah, it's not great. But you know what? I'll say this. You know, I've seen worse. I'll just say I've seen worse. But we're gonna be right back where we have an intense discussion about RPGs. Are you West or East? More with Checkpoint Daily when we come right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Step into the secret lair of the great Landis and Professor Awesome on The Other Identity. Join me on the adventure of a lifetime as Robbie Landis and former editorial director of digital content at Marvel, Ben Morris, team up to defeat the evils of bad comic book opinions. We've added a new voice to the line in Kevin Kelly as The Opinion. We also break down the newest issues of heroes like The Hulk or Captain Marvel. Discover a whole new lair to the world of superheroes and comics on The Other Identity. Download at CheckpointXP.com or download from Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Checkpoint Daily. Norris Howard here alongside Chad Callahan and Callie Sloan. Make sure you like and subscribe. We do this every day, Monday through Friday, with clips of the Checkpoint Radio Show coming to you on the weekends. And listen, we are huge fans, at least at the bare minimum, Callie and myself. Ginormous fans of RPGs. We love us some RPGs. Chad is our horror games person.
And, I grew up with RPGs, though.
You know, yeah, you grew up with them, but if I had to say who the RPG heads in the room are, I would say it's definitely myself and Callie.
I would think so. Plus Robbie, if you were here.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there was a discussion put out by Kotaku the other day, posted by Alexandra Hall, about Japanese versus Western RPGs, and what is your preference? It's an age-old question, a question that's been asked since, I mean, really the 90s, but I think it's interesting to re-explore this in 2020 because there has been a resurgence in both, really. I think the 2000s was a really strange era for RPGs in general.
Well, it was a heavy departure from RPGs in general. Like, whereas RPGs owned most of the 90s, the 2000s saw the shift towards the shooter. And then I think, like you say, there was a kind of a big resurgence of it, I would say, around 2011.
Yeah.
Is where, and for the last 9 years, like, shooters and RPGs have now begun to coexist.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I wanted to put these questions to the room because, for me, they both have really, really great attributes that, you know, I think still no other genres really capture.
Well, maybe it'd be fun to start with this. Let's define, in your head, what are the traits of a JRPG and the traits of a Western RPG?
Yeah, so for me, I think definitely a Western RPG places an emphasis on player control narrative.
Moral choice.
Yeah,
choice systems.
Open world, you know.
Bethesda,
a lot of agency.
BioWare.
Yeah, BioWare. The player is given a lot of agency to control the narrative.
Let's put it that way. Player agency
is
big, whereas JRPGs tend to be more of a story that
focus
they are telling
narrative.
You. It's a focus narrative, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say if we're going to start at the fundamental departure as to why these two are different, that would be the biggest one.
Yeah. I think Western RPGs are more... It kind of ties in with the idea of choice, but they're more likely to have a romance for the player to experience.
Yep.
I think while JRPGs do, the romance is usually very secondary.
Yeah, or understated.
Or very understated. It's always very subtle, and that might be a censorship issue in Japan.
Yeah.
But Western RPGs are far more likely to show them.
Oh, absolutely. The amount of bare asses you see in Western RPGs compared to JRPGs.
Really?
I mean, it's not...
Looking at you, Witcher.
Yeah.
Okay, you got me there.
The Witcher alone.
I was really trying to think of what game that could have been in. All right, you got me with The Witcher.
Yeah. People fornicate on a stuffed unicorn.
Okay, so I just started playing The Witcher 3, by the way.
I play that.
I just started playing mm-hmm. The Witcher 3, and I got to that joke, by the way. That's hilarious.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's a great game.
I'm looking forward to playing the rest of this game.
It's a great game. And yes, Yennefer before Triss. But anyway, the thing that I think that JRPGs does have that I think is very, very different from Western RPGs, which has always attracted me to them, is the concept of this is larger than your character or larger yes. than your party.
It is something larger or larger than the world even.
Itself, yeah. So I think with Western RPGs, there are very much so personal stories. You know, you think about Fallout. Mm-hmm. You think, you know, Elder Scrolls gets very big, save the world type stuff. But I think when you think about Fallout, you are a lone wanderer searching for your dad
yeah.
or a family member or, you know, your friend or whatever. It is very personal sort of, you know, your character.
And how they change and
develop. And how they change and develop is integral to the narrative. How does the world perceive this character?
I would say another comparison point between the two is that Western RPGs tend to focus on the protagonist and drive the story through the protagonist, whereas JRPGs tend to focus more on the friendship and the group versus a villain, and the story always is driven through the villain.
Or a significant event.
Or yeah. a significant event. The villain. Well, and
sometimes that's the villain.
A villain doesn't have to be a person. A villain can be an event.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's the narrative drives through villains and with JRPGs, and it tends to drive through the protagonist in Western RPGs.
Absolutely. And, you know, one last thing I will say about JRPGs is the fact that I always feel like JRPGs do a much better job at characterizing its supporting cast because there's less emphasis on the main character or the protagonist. In many cases in JRPGs, your protagonist is silent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have some...
Yeah, when's the last time you had a true silent protagonist in a Western RPG?
I can't recall.
I mean,
well, other than
is your Fallout character, he's usually silent.
But right? you have choice.
But you pick choice. Yeah, but you pick things for them to say, even if they don't actually talk the line.
Yeah, they have choice. Yeah.
That's true.
So I mean, that in and of itself is a little different. And JRPGs have borrowed that from Western RPGs in many ways. But the silent protagonist, I mean, is a staple
of the JRPG. Yeah, you're right. All right. So now that we've differentiated the two, what do you prefer? Because there are merits to both.
Absolutely.
And I mean, let's get this out of the way. We are not discussing the golden age of RPGs.
No.
We are not discussing the 90s when the answer was JRPGs.
Yes.
There wasn't a debate to be had.
Because
JRPGs were better.
Because there were almost no Western RPGs to compare them to.
That's what I mean. We had to argue that things like Ocarina of Time, again, a Nintendo game, was an RPG, which technically, I guess, yes, it is. But yeah, we didn't have a ton of RPGs in that era. Nowadays, though, mm-hmm. we have a lot of them.
Yeah.
And a lot of really good ones.
And you know what? I will say this. For me, the Western RPG has a higher average, but the JRPG, when it is good, it is by far my favorite.
Listen, when it's Persona 5...
It's perfect.
It's incredible.
It's the best.
But
you almost never get
that. It's Ni No Kuni, and it's not.
Exactly. You know, or you get, you know... Waifu Simulator, which is Genshin Impact. You know what I mean? Like,
is that an RPG? I thought that was like a gacha game. I'm so
it is
out
a gacha game,
okay,
but
yeah.
You know, I'm just saying, like, you know, when you really think about it, I think JRPGs, and by proxy, I will throw a lot of Chinese developed games in there as
yeah.
well, because all they do is just, you know, borrow JRPG tropes. But I think, unfortunately, what has happened to a lot of JRPGs is that they have refused to innovate in many ways. And when they do try to innovate, they do it in such a terrible, god-awful way that they become these incomprehensible messes of games. Yes,
yeah.
I'm talking about Final Fantasy XV. That is exactly what I'm talking
about. Yeah, it's a mess.
That is a game developed by a Japanese company known for making some of the best JRPGs ever made that tried to make a Western RPG and had no fucking clue what they were doing.
And that's the thing, right? Like, so Final Fantasy XV is a prime example of a company getting too ambitious.
Yes.
They were trying to do way too much in the scope of a game. And the result was a cluttered mess that you had to consume a ton of other media to even remotely understand why it should matter.
Yeah.
When you look at Western RPGs, that it's because they drive their story so often through the protagonist that they're able to get away with doing a lot of that, because when it's you, the player, just going like, I want to go do this. Okay, cool. There's actually something that lets me go to do this. You can have your game be a cluttered mess, but a JRPG frequently is running you on a rail. You're on a set linear storyline, and then if they put all these other systems in there, it feels clunky and weird. Versus a Western RPG, which just says, here, you're dropping into this world. Go have fun. Do what you want to do. You'll find the story while you're there. Trust us, it's there. Now it's just like, since I'm making the adventure my own and doing what I want to do, you don't get that feeling of clunkiness.
No, you don't. And, you know, earlier in the show, we were talking about Mass Effect, and I think Mass Effect is probably the, I don't want to say the perfect example of a Western RPG done well, but
it's damn close.
It's very hard to argue against it, because even Bethesda doesn't necessarily make perfect games. But when you
look at least not on day one.
Absolutely not on day one. But when you look at Mass Effect and you look at what makes Mass Effect good beyond just the player agency, it is because they took a very JRPG thing, which is create a great cast, and then put it with a player-driven story, and you have now a game that is unforgettable. True. That is part of what I think makes Mass Effect so good, and I think part of what has made Western RPGs do so well over the past 10 years or so.
So there's two frames of reference that I always kind of come to when it comes to like characters versus Western versus Japanese, I guess, because like you mentioned, Japanese has an established set of characters and you know who they are. And then the other one is usually like you.
Yeah.
The thing that always gets me is character creation, customization. And that's
I'm a sucker for good.
I'm a sucker for
it. Yeah.
In America, or in not even just America, but Western RPGs, pretty good at it. Outside of the fact that Bethesda, you need to make your characters more attractive. Because I'm tired of all my guys.
Why do I have to be
ugly?
An uggo all the time?
Why do I got to be ugly as a man? Why?
So true. It's every time. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like in freaking Morrowind back in 2001, I'm willing to forgive it if everyone's an uggo.
Well, yeah, every character's ugly.
Well, everything's terrible.
Well, when I am forced, even World of Warcraft did this for a while before they added Blood Elves. Is like all the male characters were like
look hideous. Yeah, they look hideous,
looking gross. And then they brought in the Blood Elves, which had these gorgeous male characters. And I was like, I'm a Blood Elf for the rest of my life in World of Warcraft. So looks like that's what it is. Because I don't get me wrong, I like playing girl characters, but I am also, you know, okay with extending into the masculine side and the feminine side of characters and creating them.
I mean,
always irritating.
I look at a game like Black Desert, where everyone is beautiful.
Yeah.
And you almost have to try absurdly hard to make an ugly character.
Exactly. It's like,
regardless of gender.
I was watching Baldur's Gate 3. All the characters you can make are gorgeous. And I was like, the sole reason I'm playing this game is because I can make an attractive male character that isn't anime characters. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because like that's the only time you ever see like attractive characters in character creation.
And this is a very Western idea of you should have ownership over the characters that you create and play as.
Right.
You know, that's a very Western thing, not just from a game development standpoint, but I think we see a lot of how these different cultures even view media, how they view gaming as a whole.
Right.
Whether as, you know, Eastern or Japanese RPGs is very much so about you are supposed to extract lessons
and stories,
out of and story
right. There's
and
a
meaning.
Story that we are telling you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which actually comes down, that's interesting, like to think about culturally. You know, we globbed on to D&D so hard that it literally is built into our games now.
Because
that's
it's
what we
ownership. It's I want to craft my story.
Yeah.
Me. American exceptionalism.
Well, not even just America, but
no, but it's Western.
Yeah, Western.
It's a Western point of view to focus
on
the
oneself.
Self.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whereas it is very much so.
JRPG is like very the collective.
The collective, exactly. And I think when you look at JRPGs and all, in my opinion, and I know we're not talking about the Golden Age, but the best JRPG ever made, Final Fantasy VI, there is no main character. Who is the main character of Final Fantasy VI?
Yeah, it's always debatable between Locke and Terra.
And I could argue maybe Celis.
Celis, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying.
It's always about the group.
Exactly. It's about the collective. and about how this group of people together in the power of teamwork and friendship will go and kill God.
It's the crystal.
Exactly. It's about the message of how we will all get together, and it's supposed to be obviously an allegory for everyone.
Yeah.
You're all going to rise up together and, in your words, kill God.
Yes.
More often than not. They have a real issue with religion.
Yeah, it is. But with that said, we're going to go around the table and we got to pick some sides here. All right? In its heyday, at its peak, the best of the best, you get one side. Callie, what are you playing?
So you get peak Golden Age JRPG versus peak Golden Age Western RPG. Wow. I mean, it's like, so the question that you're asking
yes.
me, so you know, is Final Fantasy VIII versus Mass Effect 2.
Okay.
That is the question you are asking me. Which one do you want more?
Sure. I don't feel like that's a good comparison. Because there's how many games are like Mass Effect 2?
See, Chad has a good point.
It's not. Chad has a good point. I could throw, not Far Cry, I'm blanking, Fallout in there more likely as the gold or Golden Age, maybe Skyrim.
Let's say Skyrim as the peak representation.
Oh, okay. I was in Skyrim.
I thought it was my peak representation.
I feel like we have to generalize it for ourselves. Enough.
Okay, so Skyrim versus Final Fantasy VIII, I take JRPGs.
Okay, Chad.
Without a second thought.
I'm going to pick JRPG for the sole reason that after the character customization, I'm usually out. I usually stop playing after a couple hours.
By the way, the ease of that pick is why I chose Mass Effect 2. Because when I take Mass Effect 2 into consideration, I've never enjoyed a game more than I enjoyed that one.
Mm-hmm.
Except for maybe Undertale. It's debatable.
Yeah.
But I would pick that if that's what...
I will say this, and you guys are going to be surprised by this. And Chad, I'm not listening to you because I agree with Callie that Mass Effect 2 is the peak representation of Western RPGs.
And it can be, but I just don't have any other reference besides that.
Here's how I feel about it. Because to me, even though it is not my favorite, I think Persona 5 is like peak JRPG in more ways than one.
I get what you mean when you say that, yeah.
Yeah, it is the manifestation of the culmination of JRPG schools of thought all come together. It's turn-based. It's 30 years of learning. Yeah, it's turn-based, number one. It's stylistic. It places emphasis on the supporting cast and not the protagonist. It deals with some heavy-ass themes. And at the end of the day, yes, you end up killing God. But
it's not a JRPG if you don't kill God.
Exactly. So you put
or
that...
Or someone pretending to be God. That's yes. fine, too.
Or you put that up against Mass Effect 2... And it sounds like I would pick Persona 5, but I wouldn't. Want to know why? Because I want to play Mass Effect 2 more than once.
Yeah.
Okay.
That is my precursor.
I would never want to go back and do P5 again.
Dude, P5, I'm everybody's good. Like, oh, man, Persona 5 Royal.
No.
No.
I'm good.
I don't have another 90 hours in me for that game. I don't have it.
But
I
you know
love
what?
It.
I am geeked to go through Mass Effect 3 again to get to the Citadel DLC.
Absolutely.
Geeked to do it again.
I will do it again. And so we've come full circle right back to Mass Effect. That's going to be our show for today, everybody. We hope you enjoyed it. We will be right back here tomorrow for the final episode of the week. Make sure you guys stick around for that. We enjoy and love putting out all this content for you guys. I really enjoy it. We'll be back and make sure that you are ready. For next week's poll questions. So we'll be doing that as well. For Chad Callahan, I am Norris Howard. That's Callie Sloan. Goodbye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.